It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, American negotiators are in talks with the Taliban to withdraw American troops from Afghanistan. We'll talk to an international relations expert about the latest efforts to reach a peace deal. First, we normally do our check-ins on all things WPR with director Mike Crane the first Monday of each month. Thanks to some weird scheduling stuff this summer, we're doing the August edition today, the third Monday. I hope you can work with that. We're going to talk about some upcoming special programming, fun listener events, our plan to serve listeners better, and more. And as always, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question or a comment about what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, the Ideas Network, the NPR Classical Music Network, the special online classical music network, our website? Is there something you'd like to hear more or less of? What questions do you have about why we do what we do the way we do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Mike Crane is in the studio with me. He's director of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike, welcome back.
Yes, it's good to be here.
Well, let's start with how about a couple programming specials, Mike? We've got a couple coming up.
Sure. The one I think that we should tell you right about right now is on September 2nd. That's Monday, so Labor Day.
Labor Day.
6 p.m. It's the Big River Radio Wave, and this is music and storytelling and comedy, and it's recorded right near the shores of the Mississippi River, and we have comedian Tom Harmston and Mary Mack as well. And there's music from string virtuoso Jake Amerding. Author Doug Kane is on, and River Falls poet Thomas Smith. And Mac Cherry is the host with WPR's Al Ross, the announcer.
That's a big production, these Big River Radio Wave festivals.
Big production in a small home and just very intimate all the same. And that's, that's Monday, September 2nd at 6 p.m.
That's coming up. And there's also a change to what we're doing right now, a fun new wrinkle on these Mondays with Mike. We've had you on Central Time and the morning show. We alternate. We trade off with you. Now there's a new twist.
Yeah. I'm going to walk down the metaphorical hall because I'd be sitting right here, actually, meet with the listeners to the Larry Mueller Show.
Yeah, let's talk about Mondays with Mike a little bit. This is something we've been doing for quite a few years now, and it's a service, a way to try to connect with people and you tackle their questions.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that has been forever a joy of mine is to meet with our listeners. Usually, if it's in an event like the ones we're going to be talking about, it's a one-on-one conversation or a small group. But this is an opportunity for us to meet at large and to take on whatever you're interested in. Sometimes, to be honest, and I will say this, I don't know the answer, but I do certainly try to be up on everything, and it is a joy to hear what's on your mind, and we don't always know, and so it helps to have you call in.
You can call in at 800-642-1234. Anything else going on programming-wise, Mike?
Just sort of all the regular stuff. You know, we're getting ready for just a really big season of reporting as the elections start to heat up. I'm excited about Derailed, which is a new podcast and radio series that will be looking at now a number of years after whatever happened with that high-speed rail thing, and really looking forward to that. And that'll be coming up, and you'll hear announcements about it and get emails about it, I'm sure, as well.
Talking to Mike Crane, Wisconsin Public Radio Director. It's Mondays with Mike. Your chance to ask questions or make comments about what you hear here on Wisconsin Public Radio, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Well, we always give some personnel updates here, Mike. Somebody new people will be hearing, actually already have heard, on the air.
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of fun when you see someone follow a similar path in some ways to the one that you did, Rob, where a lot of your work was behind the scenes. And you had other talents and ended up eventually, through twists and turns, of course, hosting Central Time. And we're headed this way, I think, in a little bit different way with Keely Boltina, who has been a producer for us, the executive producer of the morning show, but always had that bug to get back into hosting and being on the air like she had been when she was in the Dakotas. And so we're really excited that she'll be pretty much heard all over WPR because she'll be heard here on the Ideas Network and all of our local shows, and also on Morning Edition and All Things Considered on the NPR News and Classical Music Network.
Right. She's already hosted the morning show. I think that was last week, and you can look forward to hearing her. She might come on with me at some points instead of me. So it'll be a new voice you'll be hearing on the air.
One of the things I just love about Keeley, and she said it as we've been talking about this, she just loves to talk with people. And you can hear it in her voice, the excitement she has of engaging with people and learning about them and helping others learn about the people she's talking to.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of me. In general, like, when I'm not on the radio, I'm not big on talking to people, Mike. But on the air, I love it.
There you go.
She's like that all the time, mm-hmm. It sounds like.
That's right.
All right. Call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Some events coming up, Mike. And, hey, I'm coming up in this one, too. I'll be at one of these events.
That's right. We have a listener appreciation event in Altoona, which is just east of Eau Claire. That's this Thursday, August 22nd. And I know you'll be there, as well as Lori Skelton, Al Ross, Rich Kramer, and Dean Kallenbach. We'll have some live music and games and refreshments, and we're going to be commemorating 25 years of Spectrum West, the Regional Arts, Culture, and Humanities Program. Now, the event is free. All of our appreciation events are, and we just ask that you register so we have a good idea of who's coming at wpr.org/presents.
I've been at a couple of these, Mike. Now, I was at one in La Crosse, one in Madison. I was at one in Milwaukee a few years back. And these are great. They're pretty chill. You don't have to be there the whole time. People kind of come and go mm-hmm. as their schedule permits. Very laid back, but a lot of fun, I've found. And I do actually enjoy talking in person to our listeners. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. For years, I've had a fun joke because people look at you and they say, you don't look like the person on the radio, right? And I said, yes, I'm taller on the radio.
Right.
but it is a lot of fun as a listener, too, to encounter some of the voices that you're so familiar with and to have a chance to ask them a question or tell them something.
I'm looking forward to seeing people there in Altoona on Thursday. You can find info, by the way, at WPR.org, a lot of news and events behind the scenes. Let's bring on a caller now. Charles is with us in Mount Horeb. Charles, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling about Simply Folk and Live From Here. I know that they're both very popular programs, but I'm wondering why they need to be simulcast on both the Music Network and the Ideas Network, as opposed to giving people the choice of listening to something else at that time.
Thanks, Charles, for the question. Historically, a part of that was that the WPR networks, the two networks, have not been sort of evenly distributed, and it's mostly still true. And so the idea was to cover the entire state with those two programs. In fact, one of the oddities that we have still to this day is that the Road to Higher Ground is on the News and Classical Network, except in Milwaukee, where we only have one station. We just honestly haven't figured out something different. And in the case of Live From Here, that was the old Prairie Home Companion before it had changed to Live From Here. And it was the single most popular weekend program on most stations. And so given the expense of it and so on, it was felt that distributing it very widely was important. Do you have, Charles, if you're still with us, do you have shows in mind that you might like to hear? Or if not, we'll count on others to let us know those ideas.
Oh, I think we've lost Charles.
Oh, darn.
But thanks, Charles, for calling in.
There he is.
You know, I know there could be some repeats from shows that I think that are now maybe in the early morning. I couldn't give you specific examples. Yeah, you know, I know they're very popular. Personally, I'm not a fan of either one of them, but that's neither here nor there. I'm just wishing there were other options.
Sure.
Higher Ground is a great example, although I know that's on a different time. Maybe if there were other music programming that doesn't yet exist, and I know that's another cost, but just to give more variety, though I understand what you're saying about the distribution across the state.
Charles, sure. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, one of the things that has been a significant change over the years is that when your main option was just the radio, we probably were deliberately more tolerant of repeating things. And that as things have evolved and more people are using podcasts and they have all kinds of other options, Sirius XM radio or the thing where you can listen to the audio on your TV, streaming, all that, it's causing us to ask more questions about, you know, what's on the radio and can we, in fact, produce more variety with what we're doing. And it's always a challenge. And I think we covered it pretty well there, Charles. Thank you.
It's the August edition of Mondays with Mike. We're talking about all things Wisconsin Public Radio with Director Mike Crane. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your question, comment, praise, or criticism when it comes to Wisconsin Public Radio? Call in 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's the August edition of Mondays with Mike. WPR Director Mike Crane is with us to take your questions and comments about Wisconsin Public Radio. Call in at 800-642-1234 if you have feedback about what you hear, what you don't hear, or thoughts, comments, praise, criticism, questions, you name it. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Another Mike, Mike in Algoma. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Mike and Ron? Rob, your litany is why I'm calling. Longtime listener and donator. I think I'm probably listening to the radio a little bit too much. Bothered by this litany of questions that's asked repeatedly during your program in particular and other programs, including National Public Radio. It seems to me like in the past, for these call-in shows, people called in and had questions that they came up with. Now you're prompting particular questions, and to me that's not an issue itself other than it's so much like a pledge drive where you're just repeating the same thing over and over again. Yeah, I'm really wondering if it's necessary.
Well, it's a great question, Mike. And one of the things we've talked about a lot behind the scenes is that the nature of call-in shows has been shifting. Fewer people feel comfortable or are calling in the just on the spot, ready to ask their questions or make their comments. Sometimes it helps that we're getting Facebook comments or tweets or whatever. But what we're finding is that there is a need to kind of give people an idea of what they might want to ask about as a way of prompting thinking. And we talk about that. Is it the right number all the time? Should we write more different questions? You know, those kind of things. It is a challenge.
Thanks for calling, Mike. I mean, my call to listeners got him to call in, though. So I don't know. Self-defeating props. No, I'm just kidding, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling in. Let's just keep going with Mike. So we've got Mike in Sheboygan now. Mike, hi. It's the all-Mike hour. Hi. What's up?
Hi. There's a great program on Tuesday nights. It's a blues program. I think it's out of Green Bay, Mary Flynn. And I would like to suggest that one, with its quality, the woman knows what she's talking about, and there's not any blues program on public radio. The other one that I find it's called E-Town, and it's late at night on Saturdays, but it's a program out of Colorado that I think also has some potential for going statewide. And my Saturday morning gripe is that after Wait, Don't Tell Me, the program that Ask Me Another, it's just very, well, not one of my favorites, and I'd like to see if there would be something that could replace that program.
Mike, thanks for the call. So first of all, Mike's talking about a blues show, Mike.
Yeah, Mary Flynch does a great job. And one of the things that is kind of a remnant of the time when Wisconsin Public Radio wasn't, when there were different public radio stations attached to the different campuses, we have a number of different program schedules around the state. In Superior, for instance, there are a couple of programs that are jazz programs, and then on a different schedule, WLSU and La Crosse does. And it's interesting to think about that, you know, are there shows that might be upgraded to, being carried statewide? So thanks for the suggestion, Mike. And about Ask Me Another, one of the puzzles for that is it does seem to appeal on average to a younger audience than Wait, Don't Tell Me, and certainly than Car Talk was appealing to when that was on Saturdays. And it's very popular, but I certainly understand that for some it might not be. And I'm just guessing at your age, Mike, that might not be the factor. But thanks for letting us know.
Thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Mondays with Mike. WPR Director Mike Crane is with us answering your questions, taking your comments. Before we go back to callers, though, Mike, Wisconsin Public Radio's old-time radio drama Live is putting on a new stage performance later this week. They're on a sort of tour over the course of the summer. What do we got going on here?
There's a new-ish. They've done a rewrite of an old show from 1939, the Campbell's Playhouse radio drama, There's Always a Woman. And it's an updated version that it's kind of like a noir narrative. Husband and wife, private eyes, a mysterious wealthy client, blackmail, gambling, and nefarious things.
It's a lot like my life, really.
And audiences really love participating because one of the things that we always do is invite the audience into the show in the form of being part of the sound effects and things like that. And it's also a bit of a homecoming for Michelle Good, who is featured in the show. Which, by the way, it's going to be at the Campanile Center for the Arts in Minocqua. It's this Friday, August 23rd at 7 p.m. Michelle grew up in Minocqua,
right,
and she's really excited to be performing in front of a hometown crowd.
And Michelle, you often don't hear her at the board, not today, but she's often running the technical side of Central Time. So speaking of people with a lot of different talents behind the scenes here at WPR. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Mary Lou is with us in Monroe. Mary Lou, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I listen to public radio a lot during the daytime, and especially I listen when I'm driving between the hours and the 3 and 6, so I listen to Central Time. I really enjoy the programs. I really enjoy what's going on. However, by the third time around at the end of the day, I could probably repeat the yes, answers verbatim. It'd be really nice if you could have less repeat on that, because that 3-hour time frame, I hear it many times over and over.
Yeah, gotcha, Mary Lou. Yeah, so the way it works, 3 to 5 is live, and then 5 to 7, the whole shebang repeat. So if you're hearing it a third time, something's going wrong.
There's an echo in there somewhere. But Mary Lou, thanks for the comment. And when we first developed the show, gosh, is it 6 years ago
now? It was 6 years, yeah, anniversary last month.
Yeah. One of the things that the crew was trying to do was to get to 3 hours of fresh programs, and they were doing 2.5 for a while and nearly killing themselves. It just became too hard to maintain. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is actually that even the National Public Radio shows, Morning Edition and All Things Considered, are 2-hour programs that roll over. And that disadvantages those of us that listen a really, really lot, like you do, Mary Lou, because of the repeating. Another possibility, we've certainly talked about it, but would be more expense, would be to pick a different show instead of repeating or something like that. But we definitely do talk about those things.
Mary Lou, thank you so much. I love to hear that, though. She loves the show, just wants more of it.
Yeah.
Great. I love it.
More fresh.
Let's go back to our callers now. Scott is with us in Luxembourg. Scott, hi.
Good afternoon. The first caller prompted me to think about something with the Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening music. I really like the Moth Radio Hour. I used to love listening to that on Fridays on the way home from work. And if I could hear that again at some time, I think it's a fantastic program and should be broadcast more often.
All right. We'll chalk that up as one of the suggestions. Thank you.
Scott, thanks a lot. Yeah, a lot of people like the Moth.
Yeah.
So some fun storytelling there. Thank you, Scott, for calling in. Cade joins us next in Madison. Cade, hi.
Hey, I used to live in La Crosse, and on Sunday nights, they used to have experimental slow electronic music for an hour, and that was always really interesting. And they would play a lot of blues and jazz at night. It was a lot better than the constant classical music we seem to get in Madison.
Cade, thanks for the call. So an experimental, maybe electronic music show.
Yeah, there used to be more of those shows that were even just available in the kind of syndicated world, and less so now. I think that one of the challenges that every radio station faces is the more different kinds of shows that you broadcast, ironically enough, the fewer listeners you will typically have. And here's the reason, which is that it's as if the radio station itself changes each time you change. And so we're always trying to balance the two try to have a big enough audience to support everything, but not wall ourselves off from some of the alternatives that people are able to hear.
Well, maybe two birds with one stone. Instead of repeating Central Time, I'll just DJ electronica music. I don't know a lot about it, but I'm a quick study.
Yeah, Mike? Yeah. Well, yeah. Many people in public radio are.
All right.
Quick studies.
Cool. Thank you so much for calling in, Cade. One more event I didn't want to overlook here, the WPR Politics podcast. Now, you can listen to it as a podcast. You can also see them live, though. They're hitting the road.
Yeah, Mike. That's right. We have a couple of these coming up. I mentioned early in the show that we're working on the upcoming election time and so on. And so this is really fun. You get to see our State House reporters, Laurel and Sean, along with host John K. Wilson, and they have just a lively conversation in the podcast style about what's going on with politics these days in our state. And so it's Thursday, September 12th at the Harborview Event Center in Washburn, and they're going to be moving around. They'll be in Waukesha in October and then later in the fall in Eau Claire.
Time for another caller or two. Bob is with us now in Stoughton. Bob, hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. My question is, I was wondering about the idea of having, why is the BBC Newsday after Q instead of like Latina USA and Reveal being moved up to that slot? I mean, I like to listen to those programs, but having to go through another hour or half hour BBC, I don't know, I kind of turn it off. So what do you think?
So basically, you'd rather different times for those other shows is what it sounds like.
Earlier, it sounds like.
Yeah. And sometimes it's literally formatics that if there's a half-hour slot, we have to find some show that fits a half-hour, which those other ones don't. And so that causes some of those things. And other people, of course, you know, some people love the BBC. If we had more time, someone would tell us, please keep it. But thanks so much for the call, Bob.
All right. And Mike, we have this ongoing studio update going on. We're in our temporary studio, Buck Studio, actually a nice fancy, currently a storage room / temporary studio.
Yeah. And you know what happens with every construction project? You find twists and turns as you go. And we found some interesting things,
oh, yeah,
and that kind of slowed us down. But we're getting back on track. And maybe by the next time I circle back around to Central Time, it'll be in the refurbished studios.
I am looking forward to that. Mike, thanks a lot for coming by.
Great to be here.
That's Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He joins us on the Ideas Network once a month, either on Central Time, the morning show, or starting soon, the Larry Mueller Show, to talk about the latest at WPR. After the news, we'll talk about why the Trump administration is talking about withdrawing troops from Afghanistan and the challenges of reaching a peace deal. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new research shows laugh tracks actually make jokes, even bad jokes, funnier. We'll talk about that story and more when we check in on some of the most intriguing stories in the world of science. First, the Trump administration is in talks with the Taliban over a deal that could withdraw thousands of American troops from Afghanistan. That's according to the Washington Post, which says the move would be part of a broader peace agreement between the U.S., the Afghan government, and Taliban fighters. But the deal's not finalized yet, and there's a debate over whether withdrawing American troops now is the best thing for national security in the long run. Dalia Fahmy is an associate professor of political science at Long Island University in Brooklyn. She focuses on international relations and military and defense policy there. Dalia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what do we know about the deal that's being worked out now, apparently by a U.S. negotiator and members of the Taliban?
Right. So there's currently a deal on the table that's a product of several months, actually since last year, of rounds of peace talks between the United States and the Taliban, primarily held in Qatar, in Doha. The interesting thing is that they're between the United States and the Taliban and not the United States and the Afghan government. And that's because the Taliban does not recognize and refuses to sit down with the Afghan government that it sees as a puppet of the United States. Now, there's interesting developments in that this proposal that is now on the table since last Friday, since the ending of their last meeting, needs to be agreed on and finalized before the coming Afghan presidential election. The coming Afghan presidential election takes place in 6 weeks, in September. And so there is one major sticking issue, and the major sticking issue is their inability to agree on counterterrorism. I think surprising thing for most people watching this is that when you are unable to agree on the U.S.'s role in the future of counterterrorism in Afghanistan vis-a-vis the relationship with the Taliban, Afghanistan is a country where ISIL or ISIS or the Islamic State's footprint has not diminished. Contrary to what the president sometimes touts. And for this to be the major sticking point is very interesting because it runs counter to how we understand security in the region. Now, the other thing that needs to happen before the Afghan presidential election is that it needs to move past this round of agreements so it can enter into what is going to be across-the-board national conference on the future of Afghanistan. Now, that part needs to be agreed on before the presidential election, because if the presidential election were to take place and the agreement was not finalized, then all of these agreements can be rendered null and void. And so there is a very serious time crunch issue that these agreements need to be signed and verified before the coming Afghan presidential election. In this process, the Taliban are talking about possibly changing the constitution. But if we take a kind of wider step back and look at what this agreement and what it's all about, the average Afghan is fundamentally in the dark. They don't know what is included in this agreement. And yet it's moving forward at a very rapid state. Now, if we take a longer view of history and remember that the United States and the coalition forces entered Afghanistan in 2001 after the 9/11 terror attacks to rid Afghanistan of the rule of the Taliban that had been in place since 1996. This is where the U.S. and NATO came in. And 8 years later, there was this major troop surge under President Obama. And President Obama had promised that troops would begin to withdraw in 2011, and we have not seen that troop withdrawal. As of today, there's upwards of 20,000 U.S. troops. And 98 of them are active soldiers. And so when we think about what this really means for President Trump, one of his long-term promises since he was candidate Trump and what he wants to finalize before the 2020 election is a complete withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. And so there's these two clocks that are ticking. First, the Afghan presidential elections, and second, the U.S. presidential elections. And so what we're starting to see as those of us who are looking at this from afar is that this could possibly be a peace deal for a peace deal's sake and not for the sake of real long-term peace.
And Dalia, I wanted to ask, Afghanistan hasn't been on the front pages in the United States as much as it once was. The Taliban are in a stronger position than I think a lot of Americans might be aware at this point. Is that right?
Absolutely. The Taliban last year opened a headquarters in Qatar, in Doha. The Taliban have been part of rounds of conferences and rounds of peace talks in both Russia, Pakistan, and in Qatar with the United States. And they have representation, you know, through these negotiations, even in the headquarters of USIP in Washington. And so, yes, the Taliban have grown stronger in representation and in recognition, and that's kind of by design. They are positing themselves as the international power player that is Afghanistan and juxtaposing themselves against the Afghan government. Now, if you look at how this was just, you know, between 2008 and today, it was the exact opposite. The U.S. refused to sit down with the Taliban, and it was only with the Afghan government, and this was under Hamid Karzai. Today, what we're seeing is the fundamental flip to the other side, where we are not sitting down with the Afghan government per se, but we are sitting down with the Taliban as the key to the future future of Afghanistan. And so this is a great shift in U.S. and Western policy towards the region. And yes, as you've said, although the only coverage we see coming out of Afghanistan, for example, is the terror attack of this weekend on a wedding where 63 people were killed and upwards of 200 were injured, we're not seeing what's actually happening in Afghanistan politically on the ground at all in media coverage.
Talking to Dalia Fahmy from Long Island University, looking at U.S. negotiations with the Taliban in Afghanistan and the prospects for troop withdrawal. Dalia, as you mentioned, the United States sent troops in Afghanistan 18 years ago in part to overthrow the Taliban. One possible outcome here could be the Taliban end up controlling Afghanistan again, but with a promise that they won't harbor international terrorists again?
And that there will be kind of some kind of coalition across the country of input on the governing of the country in the future. But again, all of this is very fragile. Now, you know, when I teach my students about conflict resolution, when we think about how do you end or negotiate a protracted conflict, if the concerns of past grievances, the quality of state governance, the actual projection of every voice in local politics, but also economic and social policy that reflects the needs of the country are not met, then this is just a short-term band-aid on a problem that has really long-term implications. Now, if we think of this as peace just for a peace agreement's sake and not for long-term stability's sake, then we're not really talking about the developments of the past couple of years in terms of schools and institutions and the role of political actors and the role of women in society. If this constitution can very easily be rewritten or amended by the Taliban, then what does it mean for past developments and what does it mean for future long-term stability? Now, this has been a protracted conflict that's shifted in nature. But what we want to ensure is that the future shifts are in the positive direction and not in the negative direction. Remember, ISIL still has a significant footprint, and that should be our primary concern. We don't want to leave Afghanistan for the sake of leaving Afghanistan. We want to leave Afghanistan under conditions that ensure stability in the region and U.S. interests. Now, remember, who are the other power players? It's neighbors of India and Pakistan and Russia. The last cycle of negotiations and conversations with the Taliban were held in Moscow in February. And so, of course, there is an interest on behalf of Moscow for the U.S. troop withdrawal, but it should not be for the sake of the 2020 election. It should be for the sake of regional stability. India and Pakistan are flaring up in their tensions over Kashmir, and they both have vested interests in Afghanistan. And what we're not paying attention to is the shifting regional dynamics that are quite significant, where the United States should be answering those almost tectonic shifts and not ignoring them for the sake of troop withdrawal for troop withdrawal's sake.
I think for President Trump, and I think it's fair to say for many Americans, the idea is, okay, it wasn't the right time to withdraw troops 18 years ago or 8 years ago or 5 years ago. We may never be at the point where it's okay for us to be done there. So why not now?
It's not about why not now. It's the question should be more about the conditions and the process and putting in mitigators of possible failures. It's not withdrawal for the sake of withdrawal. Of course, in the United States, there is Afghan and Iraq war fatigue. That goes without saying. But withdrawal has to be in the sake of stability, because if we hedge long-term stability for short-term gains, we know what this could lead to in 10 and 15 years. If ISIL's footprint is not shrinked, if we don't actually meet the needs of the Afghan people, if there isn't a coalition government that could actually lead to a future possible stable Afghanistan, then U.S. troop withdrawal today could possibly lead to a U.S. troop return in 10 to 15 years.
Dalia, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Dalia Fahmy, an associate professor of political science and an expert in international relations and military policy at Long Island University in Brooklyn. She was with us today to talk about what it could mean to begin withdrawing American troops from Afghanistan as peace negotiations between the U.S. and the Taliban continue. Coming up, static electricity could be the next hot renewable energy source to power our cities and our phones. We'll learn about that story and more coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, documents show that despite concerns, environmental regulators still approved a permit for a mine in Michigan across the Wisconsin border. We'll look at the latest news about the Back 40 mine. First, it's time for our monthly check-in on science news with Discover Magazine. If you've ever rubbed a balloon on your head to make your hair stand on end, you could be playing with a power source of the future. Plus, the latest research on black holes and laugh tracks. Bill Andrews is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Bill, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Well, Bill, in this month's issue, an article about static electricity, right? A kind of a nuisance for a lot of us. It has potential to be a power source?
Yeah. It seems surprising because, like you said, we're all familiar with the balloon rubbing and maybe in the wintertime when it's cold, you get a little static shock touching a doorknob or something. But that's still electricity. Those are actual sparks. And new research taking place all over the world has shown how scientists can actually make use of those sparks with cool new devices like special fabrics you can wear, and then just the casual day-to-day rubbing of that fabric against itself, against your skin, will produce electricity. It can power things like your smartphone, your watch, your tablet, and maybe the technology can scale upwards too.
Right. That's the thing that makes me think, makes me wonder about it. There is static electricity. We all know that. But it seems like such a small amount of energy when we get that one little zap. But over the course of a day, if I move around a lot, maybe I've got enough for my cell phone battery.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because every individual little zap is a tiny amount of voltage, of current. But yeah, add them up over the day. You move your arms a lot, as the day goes on. Some of these devices are in your shoes, so every step you take. Some can harness the power of your fingertips as you're typing on a keyboard. So all kinds of novel ways to just make use of the energy of pressing materials together when they rub up against each other. All that can add up to some pretty significant energy.
And a lot of the challenge here is engineering, it looks like, and material science. We need to really, to get a lot of that static electricity, we need the right, often two materials next to each other, right, rubbing against each other to generate that force.
Right. There are some materials that are extra great at being able to kind of become positive or negative, and that's what you want when you're working with static electricity, or as the scientists call it, triboelectricity. And some materials aren't as great for that. So it's a process of figuring out what materials you want. Rubber is a really good one. Hair, actually, human hair is another great material, as all the school kids know who have done these experiments. And just being able to get the materials and come up with these novel designs, the shirts that use that fabric, the keyboards that you can press the keys and it generates electricity, and sometimes being able to use kind of abstract ideas. And in the story, we talk about how one of the main researchers designed this plastic ball with a little rubber ball inside it, and just kind of jiggling them together will produce electricity. So you can do it in your hand and just, do a little aerobics there with your hands, and great, you've got some power. But you could also put it in a small patch of the ocean, let the ocean waves power these balls, let them kind of produce electricity. And if you got enough of them out there, you could power whole cities.
That's how it could scale up, by having, as you say, lots of little sources, but like thousands, maybe, I don't know, tens of thousands of them.
Yeah, maybe even more. We talk about the ideal would be covering an area of the ocean, the same area as the state of Georgia, and then extending down deep into the ocean 30 feet. That's like way down the line. But they've run the numbers, and doing something like that could power the world, basically. It would solve all of our energy needs.
Now, for those wearable power sources, are we knocking on the door of being able to actually buy these and put them in our shoes or on our shirts, or maybe it is the shirt? I don't know.
Yeah, all of the above. It does look like these things are on the assembly line coming out soon. There have been prototypes that have already been tested and work out well. So in the next year or two, we might start to see these kinds of cool devices on the shelves, the smart shoes to power your smart watch.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine, looking at some of the coolest stories in the worlds of science and technology. All right, let's go to black holes. Nothing cooler / more disturbing than those, Bill. Mm-hmm. The question, we know a lot about black holes, but there are a lot of questions about what happens inside a black hole. What are scientists starting to learn, and I guess how are they learning it?
Right. Yeah. Black holes are one of those perennial topics that are always cool and interesting, but also kind of always mysterious because, as the name implies, they're black beyond a certain point. We can't figure out anything directly about them. But the thing about black holes is they're also based entirely on a known set of equations that Albert Einstein first proposed 100 years ago, part of his general theory of relativity. And black holes are just kind of a specific solution to those equations. So over the years, scientists have been able to kind of figure out the basics of what black holes might be like, what they might behave like. But recently at the Black Hole Institute, the Black Hole Initiative, a set of scientists thought, you know, let's actually do this for the real-life black holes, which hadn't been done before. In the actual universe that we can see, black holes are usually spinning. Almost everything is spinning in the universe, right? The Earth by itself, Earth around the sun, the galaxy itself is spinning, and black holes are no different. They spin, too. But all of the previous analyses had assumed that black holes don't spin, that they were just kind of sitting there by themselves, not moving, because that way you can work out the numbers easier. So this team at the Black Hole Initiative ran the numbers with a spinning black hole, which they were able to do with computer simulations using these equations from Einstein. And after thinking about it a long time and figuring out the right approach and getting a lot of serious computing power in there, they were able to figure out these new insights into black holes.
And now you wrote a blog post on a related issue, wormholes, this idea that in space and time, there might be these weird connections that let us cheat and travel from one place to another faster than we should otherwise be able to. The tricky thing is we haven't been able to spot one of these guys yet.
Yeah, exactly. They were kind of like where black holes were a while ago, because they should theoretically be able to exist. Wormholes are also another consequence of Einstein's equations. So just like black holes turned out to be real, we might soon or eventually find out that wormholes are real. And they would be the perfect shortcuts. They could connect this part of the universe to another part that you would think is millions of light years away, but because there's that wormhole connecting them, maybe it's really just a couple of light hours away, and you could get there much faster if, again, they really exist.
And then there's the question of, okay, suppose we find a wormhole and we can insert ourselves into it, hoping to travel somewhere else. Given the forces it would take to create something like this, really bad things could happen to me if I jumped into one, if it existed.
Yes. Yeah, you definitely don't want to be the guinea pig on this experiment. A lot of the popular wormhole theories suggest that maybe one end of the wormhole is a black hole, because they're kind of a weird thing. They're coming from the same equation. So maybe if you jump into a black hole, you would be able to go through a wormhole and come out maybe a white hole, maybe another black hole on the other side. And great. But black holes are pretty dangerous, as we've found over the years and over the different cinematic adaptations of Einstein's equations. You don't usually want to go jumping into black holes, but some research shows that maybe they're not as dangerous as you think. There might be a safe way to approach a black hole, to be able to go through a wormhole within it, if, again, they really exist. So we have to wait and see. Maybe the future will present us with some cool wormhole options for travel.
Well, finally, black holes are no laughing matter, but jokes are. I'm going to tell a bad joke, but you may find it funnier than you might expect. Here it is. Why did the Clydesdale give the pony a glass of water? Because he was a little horse. Yeah, I didn't like it at first, but all these other guys are laughing, Bill.
That's right, yeah.
It turns out there's some research that says we find jokes funnier if there's a laugh track with them.
Yeah, that's right. Science actually proved that laugh tracks are useful for making jokes funnier. I couldn't believe it when I read it, but that's what the study showed. A bunch of scientists actually recorded laughter and then told people jokes, sometimes with the laughter associated, and then sometimes without the laughter, and universally, they found the jokes funnier with the laughter added. And in fact, there were two different kinds of laughs, two different type of laugh tracks. One was kind of fake laughs when they just told a group of people, okay, laugh, and they kind of fake laughed.
Aha.
And the other laugh track, yeah, not usually very sincere laughs. But the other kind of laugh track was actually sincere. People watched funny videos, and they actually genuinely laughed, and that was laugh track two. And the scientists found that both of them were actually very effective at making jokes sound funnier, but the genuine laughs were even better. So if somebody in the crowd actually finds your joke funnier, then you've got it made. Then if they laugh, everyone else will find it funny too.
So this says something about us as social animals, briefly, Bill.
Yeah, definitely. Jokes are a great social lubricant. It can be a nice way to break the ice, kind of a fun way. Even if something isn't really funny, you just kind of laugh and it makes people more likable. So the idea that hearing other people laugh makes anything funnier kind of across the board really can show some insights about the social science of laughter and what, you know, humor does for our brains.
Bill, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Likewise.
It's Bill Andrews, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine. They're based in Waukesha. He joined us with a look at some of the latest science news. By the way, you can read Bill's articles about laugh tracks, supply your own laugh track if you need to, and about wormholes, the difficulty of finding them, the possibility of science fiction type travel. We've got a link to both of those stories over at WPR.org. And then just maybe get a laugh track on your smartphone. Your jokes will land a lot better. Today is World Photography Day, a day to celebrate the beauty of the photographic image, if you're good at taking pictures, which I'm not. So I asked Bill Martin, Central Time producer, who is a talented photographer in for World Photography Day. Hey, Bill.
Hey.
Are you celebrating? Are you going to go out and take pictures after the show?
I might now. I didn't even know this was a thing until you told me about it this afternoon. So
yeah,
I didn't have any plans.
You didn't have any plans. Now, you are a good photographer. How did you get there?
I think it's just something that I'm just naturally wired to like. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, when I was back in my TV career, I also used to be a videographer.
So you're a one-man shop.
Exactly. And then that just kind of translated into still cameras, and I just really have a lot of fun doing it.
Now, people can see your work randomly strewn about WPR.org because you take some of the pictures we used. You've been going around the state collecting local images.
There's a few of them up there. Not a lot, but I'm trying to get more.
And you talked about trying to get more creative with your angles.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to just go and take a picture of something straight on, but, get down towards the ground and look up or, come at it from kind of a side angle, more like a 45-degree angle. Just little things like that make a big difference.
That's great. There's no hope for me, of course. I thought when digital photography came along, I thought, great, I'm going to be a better photographer.
Yeah.
It turned out I took equally bad pictures, but faster and cheaper.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I guess that was something. Bill, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Happy World Photography Day. This is Central Time.